So for millennia, if what John said yesterday is true, going back 75,000 years, human beings have, in some ways, differentiated themselves from the natural world by using our hands to create things. And I was talking to Steve this morning, and he's saying, you can trace a people's history by their sewers and the artifacts they leave behind that they made with their hands. And there's something about culture that you can, one way to define them is by the things that they create. So what are a few things that you might think of in the Jewish tradition that we create and we use as a center point of culture? Synagogues, yeah. We build places of worship. Great. Let me think a little bit smaller scale that we might use our, you know, one person can make with a hand. Yeah, I mean, that is one of the powerful artifacts that moves through time, but we don't make it with our hands. Great, Kiddush cup, Shabbat candles, yeah. A menorah. A lulav, right? And using plants to create ritual objects. The Torah itself. A mezuzah, great.
It's like challah back here.
Challah? Yeah, baking bread. Ritual bread. Okay. So this text you have here comes from Mishnah Shabbat, Mishnah being the compendium of Jewish law plus story that the rabbis compiled together. This is coming from Mishnah Shabbat. And this is about the 39 malachot. A malacha is something that it means a work, something that we do. And the 39 malachot, well, let's read it. Will someone mind who is proficient and comfortable in Hebrew read the Hebrew paragraph? Anyone? Please.
Malachot arba'im chaser achat, hazareah, v'hachoresh, v'hakotzer, v'hama'amar, hadash, v'hazoreh, haborer, hatochen, v'hamarked, v'halash, v'haofeh, v'hagozez, et ha'tzemer.
Let's pause here. A lot of these words are not going to be recognizable because they're very specific words. Mm-hmm. So now let's read them in Hebrew. In English, sorry. Someone bust that in English.
The number of principal malachot is 40 minus 1. The forbidden malachot are sowing, plowing, reaping, binding sheaves, threshing, winnowing, sorting, grinding, sifting, kneading, baking, shearing wool, whitening it, combing it, dyeing it, spinning, weaving, making two loops, weaving two threads, separating two threads, tying a knot, untying a knot, sewing two stitches, tearing for the purpose of sewing two stitches, hunting a deer, slaughtering it, skinning it, salting it, curing its hide, scraping it, cutting it, writing two letters, erasing for the purpose of writing two letters, building, demolishing, extinguishing a flame, striking with a hammer, carrying from one domain to another. These are the principal malachot. They number 40 minus 1.
So 39 malachot. Now why, first off, are we talking about them as forbidden activities?
Shabbat.
That's right, because it's Shabbat. This is Mishnah Shabbat. This is talking about the laws of Shabbat. So these 39 malachot are forbidden on Shabbat. Why are they forbidden on Shabbat?
They're involved in making.
Yeah. Well, even more generally speaking, that malacha, work, is forbidden on Shabbat. So if these were forbidden on Shabbat, why is it necessary to forbid them on Shabbat?
Done during the week.
Right. Because we were doing them. So proof, we were doing these things. It's a proof text in some ways that we were doing these things. And they were specifically forbidden on Shabbat because on Shabbat we rest. We refrain from malacha, we refrain from work. Now, who said Mishkan? So say something about the Mishkan.
So the portable
holy place of the Jews wandering through the desert. These were the activities that were involved in creating it.
Coming back to Ben, building synagogues. This is not quite a synagogue, but it's about building the place where the Holy of Holies dwelled and we created the altar, etc. These are the 39 things that it took to build and set up the Mishkan, so the rabbis teach us.
But they aren't, actually.
Oh,
what?
What was that?
What?
They aren't, you said.
They aren't building activities predominantly. If you look at what this list is, it's the things you need in order to bake bread, it's the things you need in order to make a garment, it's the things you need in order to write a document, to write a scroll, and then you have some building and some carrying and things like that.
Right, so it's not just the building of the building itself, but it's what goes on the altar. The bread goes on the north of the altar in the Mishkan.
You're accepting rabbinic gloss as if it's true.
Anyway, so we can really...
Juicy moment. Juicy moment.
Juicy moment. Juicy moment. Rabbinic discourse. Pause. Good. So we want to bring this up to show you just that these are activities that were happening. The rabbis prohibited on Shabbat. There are debates around what these malach are for. Some say it's for the Mishkan. If you flip it over, we drew this from Chabad specifically, and they gave six areas, in the six areas, field work, making curtains, or textiles, you could say, making leather, making beams for the Mishkan, putting and taking down the Mishkan, and then the final touches. Typically the rabbis divided this into four orders: the order of bread, the order of bread, the order of building, the order of garments, and the order of fire, I believe. Those different ways of breaking this down. But it's evidence that we were certainly building and creating things for ourselves at certain points in our history. So we're going to now move towards going into some of these activities, and I want you, Mr. Rochel, to frame up some of that.
Sure. So, coming back to that question and that impulse and that need and that desire in each of us to feel connected, and to feel connected both to our traditions and our ancestral lineages that are real inside of us, as well as being human beings walking on this earth, wherever you choose to call home, we need to be able to understand the plants, animals, minerals, resources of what our land offers us in order to make life. And I can say that the people I know who have knowledge of hand skills and are actively doing them have a lot more sense of peace inside themselves and sense of ability to stay feeling dignity is a good word. Some form of dignity about who they are and how to live. And it's the people who don't know how to do anything with their hands, you know, to make anything and do anything. There's that feeling of disconnect of, you know, I think my mind is particularly going to young people, to teenagers and to the disempowered youth and to young people who don't understand how to live in a way that feels like it makes sense to them. And I think a lot of that has to do with our economy, the way it's set up right now, is one where we're totally reliant. You know, there's a dependency that's uncomfortable. Because if things were to quake or things were to shift in a way that made resources hard to get, we'd kind of be screwed. And there's a way in which kind of you know that when you're walking through the world, and that grocery store, that hardware store, and the department store, I mean, that becomes our world. And that's not how it's been for us as humans. For thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years, we as a people were self-sufficient. We knew how to do everything because we had to. You know, we were living in places where there wasn't a hardware store down the street or a grocery store or this or that. And so what this provided for us was both a sense of internal pride and dignity and ability to make and do, create. It also lended a knowledge of place. You had to know which tree to harvest the such and such to get the such and such. You had to know which animals to get this from and the plants, because we depended on it. Our lives depended on it, and our homes and our food and our children. And so we have the fortune in this mission that we're on, in this week-long, you know, exploration of reconnection and reconnecting us both to what it means to be healthy humans and raising healthy children who are alive and happy and feel connected and to our traditions in these ancestral ways, we're going to go through an experience this afternoon, or I should say this morning, right now, of touching in with what are some of those skills and learning some of them. So we're going to do a little, it's kind of like a, we're going to create a village life. From now until it's about lunch, we're going to do a little mock of village life, and there'll be stations. We're going to set up 6 different stations where there will be skills happening, hand skills, that you can wander through for the next 2 hours or so. And you can sit and make the things happening there. You can sit and learn about them. If you can spend 20 minutes at a station and then go to another one and then another one, another one. You can spend the whole afternoon at, or morning actually. At one of them. It's we're calling this choice-based learning. Follow your curiosity, follow your interest, stay as long or as short as you want at any station. And these skills that we're going to be previewing are all skills that we teach little ones, the nature and bifoops, and so they're great skills to bring to young people. And I'll say, for one, being a youth educator myself, that one of the quickest ways to bring happiness and joy and excitement to a young person, to a child, or to a, especially the, I don't know if you know this stance very well.
Yeah.
The 11, 12, 13-year-old who's like getting, you know, like they're starting to distance it, like, that's stupid. Why would I, you know, want to do, you know, that severance and that pushback of not being engaged. When you are with young people and you give them the ability and opportunity to have solution, a hands-on, real-life solution to an issue or a problem, they light up. They come back alive. They start feeling empowered again, like they can. There's hope and they can actually do something. And so the skills, we want to give you the opportunity to pretend like you're that young person who gets to follow your own curiosity today. Especially for this next set, it's so we call it choice-based learning. Follow where you feel called. Stay as long as you want. And then wander. And it's good to at least visit each station a little bit. You know, within the two-hour chunk, if you just preview it and look over, it'd be great. So right here under the walnut tree, we're going to have one station. Actually, we have... we're going to be doing a fiber arts, so we'll do cordage, fiber arts for things like weaving and making things. And so we're going to keep it really simple. Again, these are crafts that we would do with our young people, with our youth. And so there'll be cordage making, making plant fibers into string and rope, and then we'll be using already made cordage to make net water bottle holders. So Sarai is going to be leading the net water bottle. Jonathan's going to be leading the cordage making. So that'll be happening in this area over here.
Imagine if you had a week, you could make a curtain. Just
yeah, or a garment. So this is the baseline skills of
life dream.
So Jess and Casey and it's like Zelig, they're going to be holding down a station on this side of the walnut tree that has to do. We're going to be doing soap fruit making, so calligraphy, and using some of our natural materials on this landscape, oak galls, to do this ink making. And what kinds of implements would you use to actually write and do writing with?
The writing of Torah, Mezuzah, Megillah, etc. So Hebrew calligraphy, primitive stuff.
Primitive Hebrew calligraphy. We'll be happening on this side of the walnut tree. Over just a little yonder, if you've seen the teepee, there's an open fire pit area by the teepee. It's good to bring a sun hat on that open station. We'll be doing fire making. So if you've seen some of the fire making, the hand drill and bow drill and ways of making fire through rubbing wood together and friction, they're called friction fire. We'll be doing myself, Dan, and Baruch will be overheading up fire making on that area by the teepee. And then as well in that same spot, there will be coal burning for making mezuzahs. Do we have the example one? There's simcha here.
Yeah, the cases.
The cases. Yes, for the mezuzah, the. So again, this is primitive style, and we'll be shown the way to sometimes.
What example?
That's a really beautiful one.
Wow.
But there's certain ways of carving. not going to quite get to that. Like, we should show the other examples. But there'll be. We'll be looking at ways that you make basically a trough or can burn out wood so that it can be used for mezuzah and. It translates
spoons,
very well also to making spoons,
bowls,
anything where there's
canoes.
So we're going to focus it though on the mezuzah, and so that's going to be over on that graveled fire pit area as well. And then right next to that in the teepee fire is going to be matzah making, primitive matzah making. Flora and Aya, is there anything you want to say about that or?
It's going to be fun, and you're going to get mixing with your hands.
Mm-hmm. From fresh grain, grinding fresh grain.
Oh, yeah. Grind the grain.
Mm-hmm.
And the last station that will be happening under this other walnut tree, but with the tire swing, we're not going to start with it. About midway through this experience, you'll hear the shofar blast, because there will be shofar making. And so Baruch's going to lead that, and the thing about making shofar is it's a quick thing. It'll be like just a little demo of that if you're interested and curious at all about how shofars would be made. When you hear the shofar blast in about an hour from now, you can head under the walnut tree and see that. Any questions?